Technology, it's such a big part of our lives. It can be fun, it can be convenient, just like this podcast, which is why University of Missouri Healthcare is proud to support podcasting on KBIA. Technology can also save your life. That's why so many people turn to University of Missouri Healthcare. Its hospitals and clinics offer you the latest technology, plus a medical team whose skill and knowledge are unparalleled. You know technology makes everyday life a lot better. Well, it's true for your healthcare, too. University of Missouri Healthcare, the care you deserve from the team you trust.
Hello, and welcome to Under the Microscope, KBIA's weekly look into stories in science, health, and technology. I'm Raymond Tongakar. On today's show, we'll hear about differences in the way that teens talk about themselves and revisit an interview about happiness. According to a recent study published by a University of Missouri professor, the ways that teens tell stories about themselves can be revealing. Jennifer Bohannock is a psychology professor at MU and was an author on the study. She says the way these narratives are told varies between genders. KBIA's John Ingram talked to Bohannock about her recent study and what it reveals about teens.
So what is it about children's narratives that are so revealing about them as people?
We find narratives very interesting in the way that people, the words that people choose to express themselves and represent themselves can tell you a lot, either more or different information than observations and questionnaires and other traditional psychological measures to try to understand human behavior.
Can you talk a little bit about the differences in boys and girls in terms of how they tell these autobiographical stories?
So previous research, both by my advisor, myself, and other people in the field, have found that even children as young as three sometimes tell different types of stories between boys and girls. And it seems to come a lot from, at least based on the research in our field, it comes a lot from the way that parents talk to their children about different kinds of events. So we know, at least with younger children, that parents often emphasize different things when talking with sons versus daughters. So more relationships and more emotions when they talk with girls rather than boys. We know that that's a trend that's also true in adults' narratives. You see the same kinds of differences when you ask college students or older to give you narratives of their personal experiences. And so again, we wanted to know whether this would still hold in adolescent stories. So we asked these children to talk to us, as I said, as part of a larger study. So we had them talk about some things with their mom together, some things separately. We had them tape record other things for us. But this particular part of the study, we had the adolescents tell us about a positive event and a negative event, several of them that they've experienced. And so what we did, we actually come up with transcripts of these events. So the adolescents, you know, tell us their story. We ask a couple follow-up questions. And then we actually write word for word what they told us. And then what we do is use what we call coding schemes to actually analyze the words that these adolescents are saying.
Do you have any plans to expand on this study, or are you still trying to analyze the results?
Yes, these results will probably be analyzed for years to come. As I said, this is part of a much larger study where we collected intergenerational stories, so stories that children knew about their parents. We collected dinner conversations. We collected all kinds of stories from the mother. We collected kind of scripted scenarios that the participants had to tell us about. So yes, these results will be analyzed for years to come. No more data collection on these particular families, but certainly themes of narrative and gender and identity will, be researched much more in the future.
That was KBIA's John Ingram talking to MU psychology professor Jennifer Bohannock. And moving on to another study, earlier this year, MU psychology professor Ken Sheldon published what he called the happiness model. It's a psychological tool that might help some people improve their emotions. His research can be found in the journal Personality and Social Psychology Bulletin. Sheldon sat down with KBIA's Matt Vito back in May to discuss his research. He began by talking about something he calls hedonic adaptation.
This just means that whatever good things happen to us, we tend to get used to them. We start to take them for granted. We don't notice them anymore. And once that happens, they won't affect us, and we'll fall back to where we started before that thing happened, that change happened. So we have this model that we constructed through a lot of conversations and research that basically says, yes, hedonic adaptation occurs, but there's ways to thwart it, to keep it from happening. And it basically boils down to whatever that positive change was in your life, you have to keep interacting with it. You have to keep deriving positive experiences from it on a daily basis. So if you got a new boyfriend or a new car, either way, you should be doing things with that person or car on a daily basis that bring you pleasure and joy. The other way to do it is to avoid wanting even more or better of the change. And this is another manifestation of adaptation. We get used to it. It's the new baseline. And now we're ready for something even better. And so we need to find ways to resist that process as well. And according to the model, the way we do that is we pause, we take stock, we appreciate, we feel grateful for the change. And it's hard to both be grateful, you know, and appreciative of something and want even more and better of it. You tend to be content with and satisfied with it.
So this is really, it's very relative to the person. So I imagine another important aspect would be to not look at someone else. I mean, you can't be envious and have this model work.
You know, a big part of these raising aspirations, I want even more of his time, or I want him to look better, or whatever, is comparing to what other people have. There's a lot of research saying that social comparisons, upward social comparisons, people who have more than me, is not very good for one's happiness.
Is there a definition in psychological study of happiness, or is it more up to the person to kind of determine their own emotions and make that definition?
Well, it's really up to the measures that we use. Basically, it's a function of having a lot of positive moods, not too many negative moods, and being globally satisfied, making a judgment that you're satisfied with your life.
Where do you see this being employed? Is there any aspect that this could fall into training or things like that?
A lot of times people think that, okay, if I get the next, the best, the more expensive version, then I'll get that rush and I'll be back where I want to be. So a lot of times overconsumption is like an addiction, looking for the next fix. We think this is very relevant to people who are struggling with overspending or, you know, spending more than they have. This model provides tools for getting the most out of the money you've already spent.
That was KBIA's Matt Vito speaking with MU psychology professor Ken Sheldon back in May. And that's it for this week's Under the Microscope. To listen to this episode and others, just head to our website, kbia.org.
Here's a little song I wrote. You might want to sing it note for note. Don't worry. Be happy. In every life we have some trouble.